This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Kazanah Research Institute's State of Households 2 report was released recently to a mixed response. Today we speak to Managing Director Dato' Charun Moksani to clarify some criticism against the findings.
There's been this long-running debate about inflation and how it doesn't really reflect the economic reality for consumers, for the public. And the CPI model is disputed globally. So what's your take on that argument?
No, that's a good question. And one of the things we've tried to highlight here is that if you look at overall inflation and then you look at food price inflation, food prices have gone up much faster than the CPI. But against that, non-food has gone up lower than CPI. And it makes sense, right? Petrol prices have come down. One of the biggest components before for non-food price inflation was petrol prices. I mean, it's human nature. You tend to remember the price rises more than the prices which don't rise very much. But having said that, it is real. It is real. Food prices have been increasing faster than inflation and people feel it.
So you don't dispute that inflation, the CPI, it doesn't actually accurately capture the higher cost of living?
Well, this is the thing, because we're trying to find out one number which applies to everyone. And the way you find one number which applies to everyone is that you look at what people spend their money on and you average it out and you average out an average out. So it's an average of an average of an average. But to the extent that we have, we need one number, that is the one number we have. And the basket, if you look at, for example, the food basket as opposed to the whole CPI basket, you'll see that we spend a lot on fish and a lot on other protein as well. So protein prices are a big component of a diet. And Malaysia as a whole, and this is not in the report, unfortunately, but Malaysia has a very high fish consumption per capita. So because of our diet includes a lot of fish, and fish is more expensive than, say, chicken. Well, generally it's more expensive than chicken. We tend to feel fish prices more than we otherwise would. But, you know, it is an average. You have to somehow come up with a notional basket of goods, and you track the prices of that notional basket.
So how do you silence the detractors that say it's not real? I mean, anybody who's gone to university knows how an average works, and even a small part will bring everything down in terms of, say, a CGPA, right? So how do you respond to the critics then?
I don't want to silence anyone, right? First of all, I think the more debate, the better. And you're right, there is international debate over what's the appropriate way to measure inflation, and there's lots of academic papers written about it. We get our numbers from the Department of Statistics, which is internationally acknowledged by the World Bank and others like that as being a very good data collection organization. We're using the same methodology as everyone else uses. So when you talk about inflation in the US or inflation in Germany or inflation in Japan, they're using the same methods that our Department of Statistics does. We got about 6.6 million households in Malaysia. And we have to condense all of that into one or two numbers. There's no point telling you 6.6 million stories. Because you know, you can't make sense. No one can make sense of 6.6 million stories. But to the extent that we want to condense all the information into one or two numbers, CPI is the best number we have. It by no means a perfect number, but it's the best number we have.
What about inflation in urban areas? Is there any reason why it's not measured separately, considering the M40 and the T20 groups are in urban areas?
Well, there are some numbers published by Department of Statistics are broken down by urban, rural, and some of them are broken down by states. We've got a short piece in here about the cost of a diet which meets the Ministry of Health dietary guidelines, and which says, you know, you need certain amounts of protein, certain amounts of pulses, certain amounts of vegetables, certain amount of milk, et cetera, et cetera. And for that, what we did was we went to the Department of the Ministry of Domestic Trade has a website which tells you all the prices of these foods at certain markets. And you'll find that it's different. Prices in Kota Baru seem to be less than prices in Kuching and Kota Kinabalu. So there is a difference between different places. And so for the purposes of that study, we did show, you know, how much it costs if you live in Kuching versus living in KL to feed a family of five a diet which complies with Ministry of Health guidelines. But I said earlier, we're looking at one number for all households and for all of Malaysia. And that's the number the Department of Statistics comes up with. If anybody cares to, they can always track their own spending index. But, you know, the CPI also reflects the data which the US has collected on our spending habits. So the lower your income, the more the proportion of your expenditure is spent on food. You know, rich people, sorry, I'll rephrase that. People who have very high incomes don't spend as much as the percentage of their income on food as people with low income. That makes sense. I mean, how much rice can you eat a day, right? So you bought your rice, you bought fish. There's a limit to how much food you can buy for a family. And the wealthier you are, the less percentage of your monthly spend is on food.
Because you have more money in general.
And even though you spend more than a low-income family would, as a percentage of your total income, it's less.
Okay, let's talk about inflation and wages. If you consider inflation adjustment, wages only grew 1%. Last year, wages in urban areas only grew 3%. So it comes about to the same thing, almost zero or negative with the adjustment. So considering the government can't control how much companies pay their employees, what can we do to address the problem?
No, low wages is an issue. If you look at some of the charts in the book, you'll see that over the last couple of years, average wages have gone up faster than productivity. But over the long run, very long run, wages as a whole have not gone up as much as productivity has gone up, which suggests that most of the productivity gains have gone to the people who own the businesses rather than the workers in those businesses. Our median wage is 1,600 ringgit a month. That means half the workers in this country earn 1,600 ringgit or less. On the other hand, half also earn 1,600 ringgit or more. And some of the issues we face are really an income issue rather than a price issue. Compare the price of chicken in Malaysia compared to other countries, even in the region, is relatively low. But it's no help if you live in Malaysia, earning a Malaysian income, right? Mm. What we want is to raise incomes. And unfortunately, there's no quick fix to it. One thing the government has done is to increase the minimum wage. And that has clearly benefited people who were before earning less than a minimum wage. We don't have the exact number that hasn't been published yet, but clearly there's a benefit. And you see it to some extent in household incomes. In 2012, about 20% of households earned less than 2,000 ringgit a month. By 2014, it's down to about 11%. So roughly 10% of households have moved up from earning 2,000 to earning above 2,000. And part of that could be due to a minimum wage. But you're right, you can't force people to... Well, we can. We could pass a law to force everybody to pay everybody, you know, lots and lots of money. But no country has tried to do that. But yeah, the long-term solution is to fulfill what the NEM says, which is make Malaysia into a high-income, high-value-added country. And it comes with training. And, you know, and you can see in our workforce, you know, over 20% of the workforce have a tertiary education compared to 20 years ago. That's a huge improvement. Mm. And the more educated the workforce, hopefully, the more value added and the higher pay they will get in the long run. But it's not a quick fix. And no country. I mean, the only quick fix is minimum wage, but that only affects the people at the very lowest end of the scale.
Okay. We'll get back to the higher education part in a bit. But for now, my next question is middle income and higher income groups, the M40T20. We've got slower growth at a time when we are pretty much subsidizing the lower income group through our taxes that pay for policies that help them. Is this fair considering BRIM and the like? They're not exactly long-term solutions, but they're going to be continued, particularly the next year. So is that really fair?
Yes, I have this complete bee in my bonnet about people's attitudes to BRIM. The word hand, you didn't use the word handout, but many people have used the word handout. And I think it's grossly unfair. For example, in the past, we used to give petrol subsidies and everybody took it as a right. And if you looked at it, if you drove a big German car and consumed lots of petrol, you actually got a lot of money from the government compared to someone who rode a motorbike every day or compared to someone who rides a bus every day. And that wasn't seen as unfair. That wasn't seen by the handout. Of course, the T20 and the M40 benefited the most, but they're quite happy to take it when they got it. Now it's been reversed, and you know, the aim of BRIM is to help the people most in need. That's fine. The thing is, it's not an economics argument. It's more a society argument. I mean, as a society, do we want to help people who have less income? At the moment, we do, not just through BRIM. Healthcare in Malaysia is incredibly cheap. I mean, if you were to compare how much it costs to go to a government hospital to a private hospital, there's just no comparison. Higher education especially is very low cost. You know, the fees charged to students in public universities is extremely low, certainly if you compare it to a private university. And similarly for primary and secondary education. And yet we don't consider that a handout. We don't consider that as being, you know, giving money away. So it seems a bit odd, this idea. I mean, we can decide as a society, we don't want to help anyone, right? So everybody has to pay market price for education, market price for health. Again, it's a society issue. You know, do we want to help or not? That's fine. We can't turn into a kind of totally free market economy. But again, that's a big question for society as a whole to answer.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.